we have to be very, very careful. What we're talking is not so much democracy, we're talking organised hypocrisy. Hard facts.
Well, the body of Razan Al-Najjar is now being brought towards the mosque here at Khan Yunis. There is a huge mixture of emotion here. We've seen some of her colleagues crying quietly to themselves, but here, as the body comes in, we're hearing shouts of anger and defiance. There has been a huge reaction publicly across Gaza to the death of this young woman. She was shot on the Friday protests as she went to the aid of somebody himself who'd been shot near the border fence, and she died of her injuries.
We use live rounds when it is necessary to protect our people. It's never the first option, but it has to be something in your toolkit if you want to protect your public from terrorists who are trying to storm the border.
US Ambassador Nikki Haley came here determined to thwart a resolution drafted by Kuwait that called for measures to protect the people of Gaza.
I don't believe that there was in the history of the United States, in the history of the United Nations, in which a country to submit a draft resolution and not to receive except one single vote, the vote of the party that did submit that draft resolution. If that is not the epic of complete failure, I want you to tell me what is failure in the Security Council. Thank you.
Razan Al-Najjar in death symbolizes life, the life of an oppressed people who refuse to bow in the face of their oppression. She symbolizes the very essence and righteousness of the Palestinian struggle for freedom and dignity. Cowardly does not come close to describing those who murder and dehumanize in the name of something called Western civilization, and neither does heroism when it comes to describing those with the courage and the dignity to defy their dehumanization in resistance. When Albert Camus said that freedom is a concern of the oppressed, he could have been talking about Razan Al-Najjar when he said that a man without ethics is a wild beast loosed upon this world. He could have been talking about the Israeli soldier who fired the bullet which killed her. Israel is not a Jewish state. It is a Zionist state. And Zionism has less to do with the Jewish faith and more to do with white supremacy. Indeed, Zionism is an ultra-nationalist, supremacist ideology that has hijacked the Jewish faith in the cause of sectarianism, exceptionalism, and settler colonialism. Thus, the State of Israel is a latter-day US confederacy, its existence predicated on the negation of another people. And as for the spectre of Hamas, raised ad nauseum in a desperate and disingenuous attempt to justify the mass murder of defenseless human beings, let me make this point. Hamas is a child of Israel's oppression of the Palestinian people. Israel's oppression of the Palestinian people is not a child of Hamas. Thus, end their oppression and you end the need for the existence of Hamas. Finally, to the brave IDF warrior who took the life of Razan Al-Najjar and afterwards returned home to the bosom of his family, presumably satisfied that he had done his duty. Slaughtering defenseless human beings struggling for their rights is never done in the name of security. It is only ever done in the name of barbarity. The suffering and carnage you and your comrades have left behind these past few weeks will follow you to the grave. No matter the calumny and lies employed to justify your murderous deeds, Palestinians such as Razan refuse to play the role chosen for them by you and those who support you. The Palestinian people will never acquiesce in their own destruction. Instead, they will continue to draw strength from the truth that no missile or bomb, no tank or military aircraft can match the power of the human spirit unleashed. Over these past few weeks, something has changed. The world has seen with its own eyes that Israel is not the victim it claims. The people coming out in increasing number across the world in protest against your brutality are no longer willing to stand by and bear witness to occupation, oppression, and murder carried out in the name of exceptionalism. It is not vengeance they seek, it is justice. And justice for the Palestinians will begin when the injustice that has placed a wall around your own humanity ends. In the last analysis, the brutality you inflict on them, you also inflict on yourself. For every Razan al-Najjar you murder, another takes her place, in process of which your humanity is eroded still more. While Razan al-Najjar lives on in death, you are dead in life. I'm John White, and this is Hard Facts. Kamal Hawash is a Palestinian UK-based academic, writer, and human rights campaigner, and he joins me now. Kamal, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much indeed for having me.
Before we get into the specifics of the murder, for it really was a murder, a vile murder, of this young Palestinian who was shot down while attempting to reach another wounded Palestinian who'd been shot as part of the Great Return March protest. Please educate us, if you will, Kamal, on what the Great Return March is, its significance to the Palestinian people, and why so many have been willing to give their lives in that cause.
That's a really important question, so thank you for raising it. Because at the moment, what Israel has been doing is trying to present this as a Hamas-manufactured effort, that Hamas is sending people to the border to give cover to its operatives to attack Israelis and kill them, which that's what it's been doing. Unfortunately, some Western governments have taken the bait and they have been regurgitating that message. But the reality is, just over 70 years ago, now nearly 71 years ago, or 71 years ago now, the state of Israel was created on another people's land through terror. Terrorist Jewish gangs, Zionist gangs, because their idea, they weren't Jews who wanted to live in Europe or wherever they happened to be at the time, but this drive to take someone else's land to create a state, an entity for one people only, i.e. for Jews, was taking place. So just before the 15th of May, which is the date when the Palestinians commemorate the what we call the Nakba, the catastrophe, and after it and since, the Zionist project has been quite simple: to take the whole of Palestine and to eject the Palestinian people from it, because that really, truly then creates a Jewish state. And so for the last 70 years, the Palestinian people have been striving to get their rights. Those who were ejected through terror, 750,000 people out of Palestine, now live in, many of them, in refugee camps. Nearly 5 million live in refugee camps. And there are others like myself who are in the diaspora who aren't able to return to our homeland. And so for 70 years, we've been denied that right, which in fact, a United Nations resolution, which has the number 194, says we do, that we have a right to return and should have been allowed to return 71 years ago and not just now. But Israel has denied us that right to return. And in fact, in 1967, Israel, having been created on 78% of historic Palestine, then expanded by force to take over the rest of it. So it now occupies 100% of historic Palestine. The problem is there are Palestinians who live on that land, and about 6 million now, and about the same number who live abroad, who feel that that is still their land and they want to return to it. So the Great March of Return was created from the grassroots in Gaza in particular to say to the world, it's about time we were allowed to go home. It's as simple as that. These people wanted to go home. They didn't want to go and kill Israeli soldiers or Israelis. They wanted to go home. And just to illustrate to the listeners what that means, many listeners will have heard of the Israeli town of Sderot or Sedrot, depending on how you pronounce it. Now, that is a town which has often had rockets fired from Gaza fall in it. They've collected a lot of these, and they take dignitaries from around the world who come to show them the suffering of these people because of the rocket. What they don't tell them is that that city was created on the ruins of a number of villages. One of them is called Najd, and that the people of Najd were ethnically cleansed in 1948, and they live in Gaza, and all they want to do is to return back to their homes in Najd. So that's really the background to this, to the Great Return March. It's about the Palestinians implementing, not asking for, but implementing their right of return by saying, we want to walk back peacefully and live with the other people who live in that homeland.
So we're really talking an historical injustice of monumental dimension when it comes to the ability of the Palestinian people to move on and to develop and to attain something that we would understand as a normal human existence. Their lives are inextricably linked to that injustice, that wrong that was inflicted upon them. And it seems to me, Kamel, that not only are they the victims of this monumental injustice, they're victims of a double injustice because they're even denied their right to be considered victims.
That's absolutely right. I think just to add to the mix, of course, the role of Britain, because in 1917, Lord Balfour, who was the then British foreign minister, wrote a letter to the head of the Zionist Federation in Britain, promising that the UK would do everything it could to help the Zionist movement create a homeland for Jews in Palestine. And in fact, when Britain was given what's called the Mandate on Palestine in 1920, they built that promise into that mandate. They worked hard. So Britain was really complicit in this right from the outset. So they included this clause to say that there would be a homeland for Jews created in Palestine. The Zionists then started moving in bigger numbers, because at the turn of the last century, Palestinians were mostly Muslims. About 20% or so were Christians, but only about 5% were Jews, and they were Palestinian Jews. They lived together as one people. So if it wasn't for the fact that there was mass migration, forced migration into Palestine, they could never have been an Israel. You know, people at the moment are having problems with Brexit. One of the reasons for it was the immigration issue. Imagine if the country here opened the doors, or people came in against the will of the British people to create a homeland for some other people.
At the behest of another country.
Indeed. And in fact, I wrote a piece on this at the last commemoration of Balfour, in which I said, imagine if Balfour had promised the Zionist movement Wales instead, closer to home. And as it happens, the then Prime Minister, David Lloyd, was a Welshman. So if he had, out of the goodness of his heart, wanted to help another people, why didn't he offer them his own homeland? And imagine if Israel was created in Wales against the will of the Welsh people, and Cardiff became the capital of Israel, and people were dispersed to all corners of Europe, into England, into Scotland, into Edinburgh, because another people took the land of the Welsh. Now, some people might say, well, that's actually preposterous. How could you even suggest that? Actually, that's what happened to the Palestinians. Another people decided to come and take their homeland. So that's really the background to it. And as you rightly say, not only were we really victims and continue to be, in fact, Israel presents itself as the victim now of what it calls Palestinian terror, where it sort of uses that to describe anything to do with Palestinians. Whether the Palestinians call for a boycott of Israel, which they call economic terror, or they fire rockets, that's terror. Or whatever they do, whatever the Palestinians do, or as for example, even an Israeli Palestinian member of the Knesset has been denied a permit to go and speak on a tour in America organized by Jewish Voice for Peace. Note this, Jewish Voice for Peace, because they were paying for it and they called for a boycott. So the whole thing is completely bizarre. What should be happening is people should be saying 70 years is enough.
Enough.
Let us sort this out in a just manner.
You're listening to Kamel Hawash. This is Hard Facts. We'll be right back. Hard Facts. Welcome back to the second half of Hard Facts. I'm sitting down in the company of Palestinian academic, writer and human rights campaigner Kamel Hawash, and we are discussing the fallout of the murder of 21-year-old Razan al-Najjar in Gaza on the 1st of June as part of the Great Return March, as she was trying as a volunteer medic to tend to an injured Palestinian who had been shot previously. She had her hands up as she approached the wounded Palestinian youth. Clearly, in the eyes of the world's press, it is undeniable that she was murdered. No excuse, no justification, murder. Kamel, it was Joseph Stalin who famously, or perhaps infamously, opined that one death is a tragedy, a million deaths is a statistic. And unfortunately, but perhaps understandably, the prolonged nature of the suffering and the deaths incurred by the Palestinians over decades, 70 years now, has induced in the West a sense of apathy, a desensitization to their plight, perhaps, on the part of far too many people. But this particular death, Razan al-Najjar's death, has really resonated in a way that we haven't seen when it comes to the plight of the Palestinians in many, many years. Give me your understanding of what the kinds of emotions that the death of this young woman, this comely young woman, has induced in the West. Do you agree with my opinion on that, or am I perhaps overstating it?
Well, first of all, I think amongst the peoples of the world, you're absolutely right. Unfortunately, amongst the decision makers, the policy makers, the governments, that hasn't happened. Our own foreign minister here, Alistair Burt, put out a tweet which was really completely unacceptable in relation to Razan, in which he didn't condemn the Israelis for killing her, but it was sort of, let's try and find out what happened. For goodness sake, it was a clear case of Razan being killed by Israeli fire. She was wearing a medical coat, clearly marked with the symbols of medical staff. She was tending people who are injured. And don't forget that the snipers who have been shooting and have killed more than 120 Palestinians since the 30th of March, when the marches started, through their scopes, they can see what people are wearing. They can identify whether the person, if they say they can see someone carrying a Molotov cocktail or a rock, they can certainly read that this person is a medical person or this other person is a member of the press. So when they killed Razan, it was a deliberate kill. And that is the most appalling thing about it. The fact that she was a medic, the fact that she was a volunteer, she has not ever been paid for the volunteering that she does. Just imagine the selflessness of this young woman. But this sniper looked at her through his scope and took her out. It's as if he was deer hunting or something. It's absolutely incredible, the callousness and the evil that must sit in that person's heart when he makes that decision. But of course, even worse, the leaders who tell him that, or her, that they can do that at will. They can decide what to do. So I think people, when they looked at the whole thing and...
Oh, sorry, Kamel, can I just stop you? Sorry to interrupt you, sir, but it's a very important point to make. There is a saying that no man does evil in his own mind. And such is the level of indoctrination and conditioning and Zionist ideology with which these young soldiers are indoctrinated, that they believe that what they did was justified. They must be able to justify it to themselves, else they will crumble. I think they will eventually, because I don't think this level of evil and barbarity can be withstood for long in terms of its consequences on the human spirit. But this is a product of this ideology, is it not?
Well, the ideology says that we want to take that land, we want to get rid of the people, no matter what they say. They've just briefly digressing, but to illustrate the point, only yesterday in the Knesset, a motion to label, if you like, to give equality to all citizens of Israel was shot down in the Knesset because they said that would change the nature of the state as a Jewish state and would give equal rights. Listen to this, equal rights to all the citizens. For goodness sake, which country that has any respect for itself and is respected and is an ally of the West discriminates so blatantly between people on the basis of their religion? So unfortunately, that's part of the thinking there. But what really gives them carte blanche to do this is Western complicity. Because what Western politicians, again, including our own minister here, Alistair Burt, and Nikki Haley in the Americans, and all the others, they've been saying Israel is entitled to self-defense. It has every right to protect its border. The fact is, Israel has no borders. It hasn't declared a border, otherwise it wouldn't be occupying the whole of historic Palestine. The people of Gaza are still under occupation because Israel controls every aspect of their lives. They can't leave the strip. They can't seek medical attention outside the strip. It decides how many trucks go in, what medicine goes in, what supply. It controls absolutely everything. So in fact, it is still a belligerent occupation of the whole land, and so therefore there is no border. A border is established when Israel sits down with the Palestinians and they agree on what the borders are. But what Netanyahu has been saying, the Prime Minister of Israel, is that they must keep security control over the whole land. How can you then have two states, for example, if one state controls the whole of the land? It is just a joke. So Western politicians, Western leaders have been siding completely with Israel. They've been trying to choose their words to show they care for the Palestinian people and their suffering, but in reality, they don't. What they care about is keeping their ally happy. And in the case of Britain, it's even worse than that, because what Britain is doing is Britain post-Brexit is looking to secure trade deals. And Israel is on a list of 10 countries it wants very early trade deals with. So they're going out of their way. We are, as Britain, going out of our way to...
Britain is now dancing with the devil of Netanyahu and the devil of Trump, isn't it?
I'm afraid so. And I think both will sting them.
Now, the mode of existence of the Palestinian people you outlined, Kamel, conforms to a mass experiment in human despair. And I think that the reason that the Nikki Haley and others of her ilk, not to mention the Israelis themselves, Israeli spokespeople and ambassadors like the otherworldly Mark Regev in London, they're able to so blithely and with such insouciance deny that the human rights of the Palestinians are being violated, because in truth they deny that the Palestinians are actually human beings, or indeed full human beings. And this takes me back to the notorious quote of the former Israeli Prime Minister Golda Meir in 1969, when she said that there were no such thing as Palestinians. Now, we know that that was never a statement of historical fact. I think it's true to say it was a statement of intent going forward. Do you believe that the objective, because there must be an objective to this level of cruelty, day in, day out, whether it's lethal or whether it's just the molestation of Palestinian civilians at checkpoints, making their lives increasingly intolerable and untenable? Do you believe that the objective is to force them to leave of their own accord because life becomes so intolerable that they will have no choice?
Well, that's what they tried to do in 1948. They didn't succeed in ejecting them all from Palestine. And I guess now that there are nearly 6 million, you know, the Palestinians breed like any other human being, any other people. And so I think the Israelis now regret the fact that they didn't finish the job off back in 1948 or in 1967, when they, again, there was another, what we call the Naxa, which today... on the 5th of June, it's commemorated, which is when Israel occupied the remaining 22% of historic Palestine. So the idea is that, as you rightly put put it, maybe now with the sort of social media and so on, it would be too obvious to knock on doors and throw people out and push them into Jordan, because there are still Israelis now, Zionists, who believe, when you talk to them, they say, yes, we believe in a two-state solution. One of them is Israel and the other one is Jordan. In other words, that the Palestinians should be pushed into Jordan and indeed into the Sinai Desert for others. But the point is they want to take the whole land. And if you take it to the next level, one of the most disturbing images of the last two or three weeks, apart from, unfortunately, the deaths of Palestinians, was the image of the American so-called U.S. ambassador, David Friedman, who's just moved into the new embassy building in Jerusalem, standing with a big poster, and with the group who promote this, a big poster showing a Jewish temple in place of the Dome of the Rock. Now, this isn't conspiracy theory from me. The image is available on the internet, and the man is standing there smiling with it. Okay? So not only is it about getting rid of the Palestinians, it's about changing the whole nature of the land. An Arab land, Palestine is an Arab land, and they want to change it into Jewish lands. So all the symbols, everything needs to be Jewish in order for them to feel that it's become the Jewish state. And I mean, the danger of this is with the impunity that Israel is also enjoying at the moment, is that Israel is so powerful, it feels it can do anything. And I did say that it would be too obvious to put people maybe on buses to Jordan and so on. But watch this space. I don't think the Zionist movement has finished yet. And at the moment, with Donald Trump giving them carte blanche to do whatever they want, for example, they're now asking Trump to recognize the Golan Heights as Israeli, that the sovereignty should be extended. Well, what he did when he recognized Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, he says it was because of facts on the ground. And so Israel has been, since its creation...
And by the way, just to make a very important point here, facts on the ground as a concept has absolutely no basis in international law.
Correct. However, what happens is, like, for example, the settlements, they will say there are now nearly 800,000 Israelis in the West Bank and East Jerusalem, and indeed in the Golan Heights. We can't move them. That's what it does. If we move them, there would be uproar. And even worse than that, Netanyahu says, why would you move Jews out of their homes in what he calls Judea and Samaria? That would be ethnic cleansing. So we go back to the issue of the victim that you pointed to a few minutes ago. Here we go. People who shouldn't have been moved because it's a war crime into another people's land, we call for them to go back to where they came from. If it's Israel, to go back to Israel. If it isn't, to find their own arrangements. And Netanyahu says that would be ethnic cleansing. So that's what I mean by facts on the ground. But unfortunately, you see, what has happened is suddenly a window has opened for Israel since Trump came into office. And since Trump surrounded himself with advisors who are all not only pro-Israeli, a number of them, like Jason Greenblatt, his advisor, his main advisor, his ambassador, and indeed his son-in-law, are people, because they are Jewish, who can have an Israeli passport. Just imagine that. For example, people will recognize that Abramovich, who is the owner of Chelsea, who's been not provided with a visa to come back into the UK, has just been given citizenship in Israel. So he can go and live there, while my mother, who lives in Birmingham, who is from Jerusalem, can't go back. That's the injustice that the Palestinians continue to face.
Well, as Bertolt Brecht said, the crimes pile up until they become invisible. I think it's our job to make sure that the crimes being committed against the Palestinian people never become invisible. You've been listening to Kamel Hawash. I'm John White. Until next time, remember, the only facts worth taking seriously are hard facts.